This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Wrestling around upon Free FM, RFM, and MP. As always, I'm Grady, and live on Discord, we got Josh.
Hey!
I'm going to jump straight to Raw. It's the one that is fresh in my mind, and I'm going to go straight to the end of the show. We know that Jey Uso had beaten Solo Sikoa last week, and that he would deliver Sikoa to Roman Reigns. Little sketchy, little worried, but ultimately, Solo gets pop of the night and spikes Roman Reigns straight in the throat.
The entire episode is basically about Solo. I find it very funny that that everything goes about when LA Knight's going to get a title, should get a title shot at Money in the Bank. That seems to be what all the rumors are and stuff. And but he's not even the most, he's nowhere even close to even the fifth most important person in the storyline he's in.
I
like LA
him,
Knight.
It's kind of like the title is important to LA Knight, whereas Solo, it's like beating Roman Reigns is what's important.
I'm honestly, I want Solo to beat Roman. Mm-hmm. I want Solo to become world champion. I think he deserves it. The stuff that he's been doing has been absolutely entertaining every second that he's been on television. Numerous times, people have said he's been the MVP of whatever show he's been on. And I can't deny that. I think Solo is coming into his own. And I think if they need to strike while the iron is hot and you can put the title on him, let him run for it a little while, and then you can figure things out from there. But it's like, I think that's what you got to do. I think you need to put the title on Solo.
Yeah, it is definitely an interesting one because it feels like they were going to put Solo back in, but the reaction that Solo got made them sort of change their minds a little bit, let him stay face, let him go against the bloodline, and it's only built since then. The fans have really gotten behind it, so I do wonder if potentially the original plan was LA Knight at Money in the Bank, and we just have to see how hard they are pivoting, and if they, you know, if the plan truly was Solo just falling back in line, pivoting to him as world champion is a big pivot that I don't know if they're going to adjust and make that or not, but it does feel like it's now or never for Solo. We do see a lot of the time, LA Knight's probably one of those great examples where you get the crowd behind you, you get up, and if you don't capture the title, you just kind of fall back down the card and might not get a second shot at it. And when, you know, your champions are Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes, 9 times out of 10, it's a little bit hard to get the title off them. So there's a lot of people who sort of reach that ceiling, get their title shot and fade back down. And, you know, I'd be happy to see Solo get that title shot. I'd be happy to see him get the title. Do I think he will? Different question. But clearly we're back into that phase where you're either with us or against us, and that's the entire storyline of Raw. We saw the Usos get some black Ulafalas, Jacob Fatu seemingly for now still falling in line. Survivor Series coming up as always. Bloodline finds a way to be involved in War Games every year. There's a lot happening right now.
Well, I will say one thing. It's not you. A lot of what you just said was like acting like it was a foregone conclusion that Solo was going to fall in line and do everything with the Bloodline. We have seen it multiple times where they seem to make a quote unquote bad move in the fan set, and immediately the next week they turned it on the head because that was a whole plan the entire time.
I'm that going is to true.
Daniel Bryan joining the Wyatt family, then turning on them in the next week in a cage match. A perfect example. Another one a couple years later involving Bray Wyatt again. Randy Orton joining the Wyatt family. And then a few weeks later, turning on them. So
yeah.
It's not outside the realm. And I think this was brought, what I don't think the outcry changed anything. I think this was what was going to be the plan. And I think they need to strike with the iron heart. The problem is that when you strike with that iron, and if you do go with Solo, that means that once again, LA Knight doesn't achieve his goal. And maybe that could play into something towards the future. I think
maybe
LA Knight would be as a heel anyway.
Well, we'll see how it all shakes out, but there is one aspect I do want to talk about, and that is Jacob Fatu. I've seen some people call it malicious compliance of Roman Reigns said I'll handle him, didn't give him a command directly, so he didn't attack. I've seen some people saying Jacob Fatu sees, oh, look, you can just not fall in line. What do you think his role going forward is when he's just, you know, standing in the corner, not protecting his guys?
Well, I would say I was along those same thoughts until I remembered Roman Reigns ordered him not to do anything to LA Knight. He ordered him not to do anything to Solo Sikoa.
Yeah.
So
he's just following orders.
He was following orders. For a goofy role, but yes, it is kind of malicious. It is.
Yeah, it kind of fits that role that I guess he's playing with the Bloodline at the moment, where Jimmy and Jay seem to be fully in it, hanging out with their cousin. Jacob Fatu was forced into it, and he does just take commands. I don't want to call him a lapdog, because that sort of discredits how much destruction he can cause, but he does take a command only from Roman. He has never kind of looked happy hanging out with the Usos. He's just been like, hey, I lost my tribal combat, so I'm going to stand here and I'm going to do what you tell me exactly as you tell me and nothing more. And maybe that's where Solo goes in this. If Solo sees his friend Jacob being in a position he doesn't want to be in, maybe they end up having a Roman Solo tribal combat where if Solo wins, Jacob's free. There's paths that they could take for sure. And then jumping over to SmackDown, I do want to talk Chelsea Green. We popped for her title win. Everything was looking up, and unfortunately an injury falls to Chelsea, and then it almost looks like we're going to have an interim champion, but she's got 30 days. We got a month.
She'll maximize her minutes while she... we'll have to see. I'm pretty sure that they'll just have her wrestle with a mask on. But, yeah, it'll just be very interesting seeing how they play it out. But...
Yeah, I would be kind of disappointed. Obviously, you can't... Injuries are injuries and they happen when they happen, but it'd be really disappointing to, you know, have Rhea off on an injury. Say we're going to do an interim champion. It's somebody like Chelsea who we're taking, you know, a big risk on. She got the fans behind her, but is what most people would consider a lower card, not a main eventer. Gets the title, gets the big pop, starts building a story with it, and then gets injured. It's very unfortunate timing. But if it did get us anything, it got us Gunther beating the HE double hockey sticks out of Matt Cardona, which may have made Josh happy.
Hey, if said, I hated Zack Ryder. I have no beef with Matt Cardona.
Of course.
And in fact, there were multiple times where I said, I'd be fine with them signing Matt Cardona, just not Zack Ryder. So, I'm interested in seeing if this is like some sort of stopgap or something, or could this be really just a way to elevate Matt Cardona without really having to put him in like an upper mid card feud outside of just Gunther?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be interesting. Gunther is obviously the big question mark at the moment after he's always in high profile stuff. He's the career killer. What do you do with him between that? And maybe we start getting answers here if it's just destroying the Matt Cardonas of the world. We'll have to see. I'm gonna go into our entrance theme. When we come back, I got some NXT men's division to talk about. I got some new champions to talk about. And if we got time, we got some other SmackDown stuff to talk about as well. But our entrance theme this week is Solo Sikoa.
Omega the end, let it begin. Give you a scope through my lens. I do not follow no dreams. You see the light, you can believe all the hype. Relentless from day to the night, you're paying the price. Tell them my time is now, I'm active and ready to fight. Into the struggle, the hustle, the pain. I see the smiles from the fake on their face. This is my time, ain't no time to waste. The warrior's ready, they're screaming my name. You taking it all, settle the score. No, I will not take a loss, taking it all.
And you're back for Wrestling Roundup on Free FM, RFM, and MPR. Jumping over to NXT. Last week, I think it was, we had the main event was the number one contendership for the NXT title, Grayson Waller, who's recently gone down and started cutting scathing promos and rebuilding himself down there, up against Cruz Montana, the former Mike Santana. Yes, that is confusing. Ultimately, getting interfered by Zilla Fatu, making his debut for a men's division that I was worried that we were just going to repeat Naraku versus Tony D'Angelo 100 times over. In the span of a couple weeks, it just got buffed out.
Yeah, I think there's definitely some interesting stuff that they've been doing here. Obviously, they brought in Naraku, and even though he did take two shots and failed at Tony, he's still a talent to be used. You're building talents like Mason Rook and Cam Hendricks and stuff like that, and then you bring in Max Santana or whatever they decided to call him. I forget what it was. It wasn't Santana. It was some off name. It was chosen by him. And now you get a surprise, because everybody expected him to be just immediately thrown onto the main roster as part of the Bloodline story. And it didn't happen. Instead, he's where he should be, learning the NXT style, learning the WWE style to get him ready for eventually joining the Bloodline story in a year or so.
That end part was important, the in a year or so, because I was going to ask, do you think he spends long down here? We've seen, you know, Bloodline members show straight up to the main roster, go into NXT for long runs, be in NXT for 2 months. So you're vibing that he might be holding down here for a little while?
I think it'll be dependent on what they want to do, but I think it'll be very similar to Solo's path. Solo was there for, I think, a year before they called him up to be part of the storyline with Cody and stuff. And so I think I could see a very similar path where he learns the style, maybe, and see what he has as a character, because he's just jumped into a big pool. He was a large fish in a small pond. Now he's in a very big pool. Let's see what he has.
There's a fair way to put it. Obviously, my spidey senses start tingling that Survivor Series is just a couple months away. But I do want to see what he can do. We've seen, you know, a few of the ones in the MFT's offshoot, but it's still kind of Bloodline adjacent, comes straight up, skipping over NXT straight to the main roster and, not ultimately finding their footing. Jeff Cobb, who's now back in New Japan, JC Mateo, is probably one of those examples. So want to establish him so that he's not just member of Bloodline D. So that when he, you know, like Solo, breaks off, he's got a character, he's got a personality, and he's got something that can carry him outside of just being a member of that faction. And talking about the MFTs, or the MFTs that are left over, all two of them, they are our brand new WWE Tag Team Champions, from a triple threat tag team match with them, Truth, Damian Priest, and the War Raiders.
I'm very interested in seeing where they go with this. Very clearly, the next step is, apparently, Shinsuke Nakamura and some mysterious person he's bringing in from Japan, that I've never heard of, but apparently everybody else heard of. Hiromi.
Yeah, even I butcher this. Hiromu Takahashi, I believe. We can just call him the Ticking Time Bomb, it's fine. I was shocked, well, not shocked, that the MFTs won the title. I think once they brought in Haku, the decision was clear that they were going to get pushed up that tag team card. We knew that Damian Priest and R-Truth's fuse had been lit. Their days were numbered. Put them in a title match. Logical outcome happens. And yeah, as you say, there was an exclusive WWE.com segment where Shinsuke says, hey, I'm coming back with a new partner and I'm setting my sights on the MFTs. He does call his partner a ticking time bomb. He does flash the exact coat that Hiromu uses. His silhouette is in the background. It's been rumored for a little while. I would be shocked if it was anyone else at this point. But either way, that seems to be, as you say, the very next feud. I don't know if we're going to shunt the title straight off of the MFTs or not, though.
Yeah, I get the feeling that this will be something that will last for several months. I don't think that this will be a one and done. I think what will happen is that in the match, when Haku will get involved, and that will cost Shinsuke and Tanahashi the match, which then will warrant a rematch at some point, maybe not immediately, because I think I would rather have him duck Shinsuke and his partner for a couple months until you can't duck him anymore, and then you could have the rematch, and then at that point then you can decide, are you going to put it on the two Japanese wrestlers, or are you going to keep it on the Tongans and go from there?
Yeah, I think it's definitely interesting. It's opening up options. As you say, probably will last a little while. This wasn't how I expected it all to shake out, if I'm being entirely honest. Not going off skill, just going off of presentation in New Japan. Takahashi, you know, kind of capped out at the junior heavyweight champion. Whereas Evil, now known as Naraku in NXT, you know, was the IWGP heavyweight champion. I thought maybe if one of them was going to go up to the main roster to tag with Shinsuke, it would be Evil. Whereas Takahashi might be the person who needed that time in NXT to build, but we've gone the other direction. There's a possibility, you know, Naraku does end up sooner rather than later joining that group as well. There is quite a bit of history there with Naraku and Takahashi, so definitely options if this feud stretches out with the MFTs to bring in help to extend their group. We just got to see how it all shakes out for Shinsuke and co, and quite glad for Shinsuke to also come up and be featured as well, since it's been a little while.
Yeah, heck, you could even bring up Naraku, pair him and Takahashi together, have them be the tag team, and have Shinsuke become manager. And then you could have yet another manager that can manage talent.
Surfing by day and managing his tag team by night definitely can work. Talking about tag teams, talking about new champions, our women's tag team, I'm getting there, leader, JC Jane, is now the women's United States champion.
I'm not surprised. I think it'll be, this is just step one to our ultimate plan. But yeah, the Fatal Influence is definitely, for better or worse, is definitely taking over SmackDown. They may be injuring some people along the way, but that's, accidents happen. That's just the way it is. But it's going to be, you have this group with OL, and you have a pretty important briefcase coming into play here in about 6 or 7 weeks. Everything seems to be to the moon with this group.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. It's hard to not draw parallels between Fatal Influence and Judgment Day on Raw. Fatal Influence obviously holding the United States Championship and the Tag Team Championship, and then you flip over to Judgment Day and they're holding the Women's World Championship and the Intercontinental Championship. There's quite a lot of gold and a lot of heel women's stables at the moment. And so it'll be interesting to see the parallels between those groups, one of them that should be wrapping up and one of them that's, you know, just being called up and about to hit their stride. But we've been saying it for a while. I wouldn't be shocked if JC Jane is, you know, a women's world champion in the next 12 months at all. We've got a little bit of time left, so I will hop us back over to Raw. I'll mention the number one contenders tournament. It's kind of gone the way that we've all expected at this point, if I can rapidly pull up the bracket. Penta obviously defeating Laredo Kid, then on AAA, LA Parker defeating Psycho Clown, and then on Raw this week, Dragon Lee picking up the win over Wagner Jr., and Ray Fenix picking up the win over Al Fiscal. We got ourselves our next matchups, Penta versus La Parka and Dragon Lee versus Ray Fenix. Are we still on the Brothers Collision train?
Gotta be, right? I mean, what other combination it would be legitimate there? You have, Penta's gotta be the top person in that tournament. He can't lose simply because he's above of everybody else in terms of card placement. And then you could possibly do Dragon Lee, but the story is for this entire tournament is Penta versus Ray Fenix. Brother versus brother. Two of the biggest stars to ever be in AAA fighting for a shot at a world title.
Yeah, they also had the segment on Raw where they did interact, they did acknowledge, I guess for those who were maybe not listening too closely, like, good luck, brother, in this championship, in this tournament. So they have reminded you of their relationship. They are setting them up. I'm with you. It makes the most sense. Dragon Lee Penta would be a good match, but it's not going to be, you know, Penta Fenix level for sure. It is interesting. This whole tournament seems to be happening, you know, to the side, when for the Bloodline, the main piece that they're dealing with is Solo Sikoa, LA Knight. But I could definitely see the winner of this tournament, be it Penta, be it Rey Fenix, whoever ends up coming out of this tournament, it'll be Penta, entering into that sort of anti-Bloodline coalition that always forms around October to December period. So this could be the shoot up the card that Penta needs.
Yeah. Which is why I would pick Penta, but honestly, the more I have thought about it, because I think Penta can get there regardless of the outcome of this match.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of want Fenix to win. Part of me does. Because I think it could put Fenix in that upper mid-card along with his brother. Now you have two stars that you can build from. And then you could have them face off again at some point for maybe a world title at some point. So I think there's areas they can go with here, but it's definitely the Lucha Brothers are going to be the finals, and whoever wins it is going to lose to Roman Reigns, but they're going to put on a showcase that's going to elevate them.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And could get them a spot in War Games. Who knows? Also, just quickly, 30 seconds, Chad Gable, Rey Mysterio, Intercontinental title was on the line. Chad does retain, gets a big moment of respect from Rey Mysterio, who can still go somehow. He's got that knee magic.
Yeah, it's just the way he's been since 1994-5, in the U.S. at least. That's just the way it is, and he's amazing, and he deserves to be a Hall of Famer, regardless of what some people think.
100%. Well, looking forward to seeing which luchador Chad Gable goes up against and gets the respect from next. But we are all out of time. It's been great talking to you.
Bye, B.
You can visit our Facebook page, facebook.com/WrestlingRNDUp, or our Twitter page, twitter.com/WrestlingRNDUp, or our YouTube page, youtube.com/WrestlingRNDUp. And we will catch you next week. Got no time to waste. Tonight's the big goal. Strike quick but creep slow. The competition is absent the moment that we show. Countdown from 3, go. Press X to reload. Deadly still try to topple the kingdom that we own. Outnumbered but outgunning. We're fearless and crowd stunning. Never win ever on record. There's no one to protect you. This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.